Guru Nation, welcome to episode 936 of Random Musings from the Clinical Trials Guru. This one is short and sweet, almost too short to be on the pod, but I figured might as well put two in one day. I've been cranking them out lately. It's why sites are the new power players, and I'm gonna do like a 10-part series on this. No fancy title, so you'll just be hearing about this theme a lot. And I wanted to put it out on the podcast too because I think it's super important. Really quick to help you be a power player, Inato is a free tool for your site for biz dev. Absolutely free. No costs involved. You do need experienced PI because some of the studies require that because they get paid from the sponsor for finding sites. But if you are an experienced site, costs you nothing. Literally, there's no hoops to jump through. They don't get involved in contracts and budgets or anything. Check out Inato, link in the show notes. And also Creo. I cannot manage my site without Creo. And I feel like Creo is helping me get past the subscaling state of my site, which you'll hear me define that term in this episode. So check out Creo. Only pay for what you use in Creo. And with that being said, enjoy this short episode. Guru Nation, thank you so much for watching and listening. Make sure you like, subscribe, comment, share wherever you may be. I really appreciate this. For those that have been following me, you already know. And for those that are new, I got receipts. So I pay attention to what I say. I'm not always right. I could be wrong. But the beauty of YouTube and the beauty of being a content creator is I could put my own thoughts, predictions out there. And then you all have receipts. I don't take them down. I've maybe only taken a few videos down in the entire time I had this channel. And most of the time it was because YouTube asked me to do it. And a few times it was because the guest that I had on asked me to do it. Otherwise, if I'm wrong about something, I don't care. I put it up there, I leave it there. Who cares? We could all be wrong. This is another one where I could be wrong. But I've been predicting for the past 5 years at least, really since COVID took off, that sites are the new power players. And it's never been truer than right now in the middle of the 2020 decade. I think by the time we get out of this decade and get into the 2030s, here's another prediction. I think site networks are going to be the power players. Right now, it's still independent sites are the power players. Why? Just because there's not that many site networks. There's a few site networks, but the majority of sites are still in independent, what I call subscale, meaning this is Yuma Clinical Trials, by the way. Standalone, although we have at my site, Yuma Clinical Trials, we are standalone, but we also are embedded into a few of our physicians' private practices. Really just one, because he's shout out to Dr. Smith, our internal medicine. He's the one that we're actually embedded in his office, and we are standalone in our own office. But for the other specialists, because they don't have enough space in their facilities or for whatever reasons, we may do some procedures at their offices, but most of the research work is done standalone. And when I say subscale, I mean we don't have centralized regulatory. We don't have centralized recruiting. We don't have centralized budgeting. We're kind of getting close to that with Chris Sauber, but that's really fractional contract and budget. And Chris does this for not just my site, but all of the sites in our network in the DSCS network. And so Chris, he's not exclusive to Yuma Clinical Trials. And so we are one of these sites. We are a small site that is still scaling, and we haven't joined a site network, although we're definitely considering it because everyone is, and it doesn't mean we will, it just means we're considering it. So, sites are the new power players. Everyone talks about sponsors and CROs, and oh, let's, you know, how do we impress them? Well, really, the real leverage point is the sites. He or she, to keep it PC, and let's face it, the majority of the people working in their industry are female. He who is closest to the patients has the leverage. You can't get any damn closer than being a site. You literally have needle in patient vein getting blood out. Like, you cannot be more closer to the patient than that. You can't scale that. Technology can't replace that. That's not a deflationary event. Sites have access to patients, sites deal with the patients, therefore, sites have the leverage. Now, there used to be a day where CROs had the leverage because there weren't as many sites, there wasn't as much transparency in the industry. Sponsors were further removed from the process. Sponsors would kind of delegate everything to a CRO and look the other way. So sponsors empowered these CROs to the point where these CROs got huge, bigger than most of the sponsors they work with, save for the top 50 big pharma. But clinical development spending is now at over $100 billion. And roughly $33 billion of that flows directly to clinical trial sites. That's crazy. That's one third of that goes directly to the sites. But there's about 25,000 or so US sites, probably more if you count the specialty clinics that only do derm or only do rare disease or only do urology. But let's just say 25,000 sites similar to Yuma Clinical Trials. The majority being standalone, many of them being part-time. So all of my PIs are part-time PIs and full-time physicians. There's some of these sites that are not subscale, but scaled already and part of site networks. Some of these sites have full-time PIs that just work for them exclusively. Now, I think there's a trade-off. I think you need the best of both worlds is really having physicians on your team that are working in their private practice and having physicians dedicated to research and maybe crossing them over. And as private equity starts getting more into, like, private equity is investing in these sites, but there's ancillary businesses associated with it. There's going to be imaging. Here's another prediction. I predict imaging vendors. Or vendors, let's call it omics, so genomics, but like imaging, let's say colonoscopy, MRIs, X-rays, CT scans, FibroScan, those are gonna also become consolidated. They are separately being consolidated anyways in their own vertical, but a lot of these PE firms are the same ones investing in both verticals, not to mention the private practice side. They're going to eventually put them all together and have synergies and economies of scale and things of that. But for right now, we are in the early stages of that. I don't even think by 2030, the majority of sites are joined site networks. I think it's just like right now, I forgot what the actual number is, but it's very low. I think it's like less than 20% of sites are a part of a site network. I actually think it's like closer to 10%. Let me look this up really quick on ChatGPT and I'll be able to see right away. I would guess there's about 10% of all sites that are part of a site network. So there's a lot of room to grow. I think by 2030, which is 5 solid years, it's half a decade. I think that number can push closer to 50. I still think the majority of sites are going to be standalone subscale. And that is only because there's always new entrants. Chris and I field a lot of calls from physicians or entrepreneurs. I think the NIH job cuts, the CRO job cuts are going to push a lot of entrepreneurs that didn't know they were entrepreneurs into becoming site owners. But I do think we get closer to 50%. Let's call it 35. I think we'll go from 10% of sites of all sites being a part of a site network to 30 to 35. And I think that's huge because for that to happen, first of all, there's not that many standalone sites that have the potential to scale. Maybe they don't have all the scalable infrastructure, but they're working their way towards it and that want to join a site network. So those are two factors that are very important. I think the majority of sites fall into one of those two categories. Either they don't want to join a site network yet, or they don't want to, or they're not building towards scaling. They're just happy having a side business. Now, I think we get to 30, to 35% of sites becoming a part of a site network, because I think the private equity and the site networks are going to get fairly aggressive, provided some major events in the macroeconomic forecast that, I mean, with this administration, anything's possible. So most of this $100 billion annually in clinical research, one third of that goes straight to the sites. Site networks are consolidating. Big pharma is way more involved now. Since COVID, with all this technology that has come to the forefront, pharma's thinking and been saying to themselves, and I'm going to save this for other videos because we're going to do a whole series on this. Why are we entrusting these CROs so much? I mean, it's nice. It was nice. But the FDA considers us responsible. We have the tools now. It's actually cheap to be involved, at least, with what's going on with our sites. Let's at least invest a little bit in getting to know our sites. And as a co-founder of Save Our Sites, which is an up-and-coming conference targeted at exactly these type of sites, subscale, standalone sites, we've had a lot of sponsor interest. If you're a sponsor and you want to get connected with these sites at our next conference or one of our meetups, hit me up. Big Pharma's tired of excuses, poor enrollment, delays, slow study startup, inconsistent quality. What's going on? 41% of trials fail to meet enrollment goals. 30% of sites enroll zero patients. Pharma sitting there thinking, and some small biotechs too, are sitting there thinking, well, if we can get that number, let's say 41% of trial that fails to meet enrollment goals, if we can get that number down in half, if we can get it to only 20% of our trials or better, more of a closer relationship with the sites, we're not getting rid of the CRO. We're going to take a little more of an involvement. I've personally seen that. I've been in this industry 2 decades since 2005. I have never seen sponsors more hands-on than they are right now. We have several sponsor reps that come directly to our site, which they used to never do. Not when I was in California, not when I was in Orange County, not when I was in LA County, not when I was in San Bernardino, and not even the first 2 years I was here in Yuma, Arizona. But now they're coming. And I don't think it's because we're in Yuma. I think they are doing this. It's been the big pharma so far, but there's been some small biotechs that are doing the same thing. Now, there's the big site networks, they're getting bigger. They're becoming the clinical trial infrastructure. You can argue, and I'm on the records arguing this, these big site networks, the Velocities of the world, and the other names don't are escaping me because I think they're all the same. There's like six of them that are huge. Alcanza's another one. They're developing their own infrastructure, their technology, AI. We haven't even discussed AI yet in this podcast. That's a factor, a huge one. Please believe me when I tell you, these site networks are investing money in that kind of infrastructure. They're starting to eat away into the CRO core competencies. And what are the CROs doing? I've talked about this before too. CROs are acquiring sites because access to the patients is a competitive advantage. Having influence over the sites is a competitive advantage. If you are a CRO or a site network, now they're on the same playing field. If the CRO wants to win the bid for managing the study from, let's say, a Pfizer. Pfizer says, well, what makes you different than this CRO? Because the way we see it, you guys do the same thing. This CRO will say, we have these sites. The other one doesn't. They're always going to try to figure out therapeutic indication. We excel in derm. We excel in rare disease, whatever. They're all singing the same tune. But that's competitive advantage. We own these sites now. And we can guarantee that you will get priority. We're going to do study startup. We have that all streamlined. And you don't have to worry about us CROs having our hands tied like we used to because the sites don't listen to us because the sites are so busy right now. They got studies coming all over the place. If you're a research site and you've been around for 2 years or more and you've done a decent job, you are getting repeat work. And I think there's something to be said about that. So the site, if you own a site, or if you're thinking about owning a site, I think it's the best time. This is the golden era of sites. We have been dreaming about this. I have been dreaming about this. I remember when being a site was considered a lowly thing, like, oh, what a hustler. This guy's not even, he's just enrolling patients, and we need him because that's the dirty work, but he doesn't know anything about this industry. Let's throw him a bone. Here's a study. Do what you can. Now it's totally different. We are treated with respect. We are the real leverage point in the industry. And so if you're thinking about starting a site, maybe you've been one of these unfortunately laid off people at a CRO or at the NIH. I know things might suck, but might be a blessing in disguise if you have it in you to start a site. And there's enough private equity out there to where you can, I mean, I'm talking to them, to where you can raise money if you wanted. I would do it bootstrap. I am doing it bootstrap. But you can raise money once you reach the point where you're about to scale and you've kind of figured things out and you're not going to blow these investors' money. You can build a platform and or you can join a platform or you can become the platform. And there's differences. If you're a site and you're about to join a site network, there's a difference as far as what you're going to get, your payout, your valuation, what your stocks are worth when you join the network. So generally you want to join earlier the better. Now there's some risks because the earlier, the smaller site networks, they're not as established, but the upside's bigger, especially if you can have a hand in the upside. Whereas if you're kind of just thinking about, hey, I want to retire in a few years, I'm okay with a lower multiple for my earnings. That's your buyout. We're going to do tons of videos on this topic and interviews with people. I'm going to join an existing site network and just ride it out. So you're basically reducing your upfront risk, but you're lowering your reward slightly. Whereas if you join closer to the beginning of a new site network, you are increasing your upfront risk, but you are potentially maximizing your reward if your site network is successful. And there's enough business out there, 100 billion plus annually, 33 billion of that going directly to sites. There's plenty to go around when only 10% of sites are part of site networks. And that number is kind of just keeping pace with the new site entrants coming in. So, yes. While we're speaking right now, sites are joining site networks, but new sites are starting up. Now, yeah, many of those new sites will fail because they're not run properly, or the entrepreneur is, has a pipe dream and doesn't is not realistic. But from those new sites, I would say about half of them will make it. And there'll be these standalone, part-time, subscale, full-time, subscale, not yet scaling. Like us, we're working on scaling, but we don't have centralized recruitment, like I said. We have elements of recruitment help. We use Patient Ace. Shout out to Patient Ace for patient recruitment. We may have an admin here and there that does pre-screening, but all our coordinators do the recruitment. All our coordinators do the regulatory. All our coordinators do the startup reg, the source. We have Chris Aubrey and myself doing the budgets. Contracts and budgets. We may have help here and there from our lead CRCs, but that's like if we really wanted to scale it, like if we were to become the platform of a site network, we would centralize all these things. And that's economies of scale. And that's not to say that we won't. It's just I want to build generalists at my site. So we're not ready to reach that point of segmenting everything into scalable infrastructure, which makes the most economic sense in the long run. But in the short run, it makes more sense to train my staff as generalist and to build that core leadership team early on. And so this is why clinical trial sites are the new power players. Let me know what you think. The next video I'm going to do on this topic is going to be what sponsors really want in 2025, and they're not saying it. It's a little cliffhanger, but that's the next one. If you like it and you can't wait to get more, make sure you like, subscribe, comment, share wherever you're consuming this content. I appreciate you, Guru Nation. Bye bye.